Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And just so you know, there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week I'm talking to Mark Beale about his book, Past Life Awakening, Seven Regression Case Studies Illustrate Seven Spiritual Laws. Mark is a hypnotherapist specialising in past life and between lives regression and spirit releasement. As a practitioner, he's given over 5,000 regression sessions since 2006. As a teacher, he has tens of thousands of students for his video courses and mentors and certifies advanced students in spiritual regression therapies. Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Simon. Great to be back.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Past Life Awakening, Seven Regression Case Studies Illustrate Seven Spiritual Laws. So how is it that this idea came together for illustrating the seven spiritual laws?
Yeah, well, I've been doing this for almost, I'm just coming up on my 20-year anniversary. And I remember when I started doing this as a full-time professional almost 20 years ago, I was busily writing down case studies, thinking about a book, and in my early first year or two. But as now 20 years has gone by, I realized that there are some patterns that I've seen in the 5,000 sessions or more that I've done with people. And I've also, in the last sort of 10 years, been training as well. So the idea came to accumulate some of the knowledge that I've had from doing all these sessions and to pass it on to my students and to make it clear to the readers and potential clients. Because what I find is these books have been written and a lot of people by now have read Brian Weiss, Many Lives, Many Masters, and Michael Newton and these books. And so that sort of introduced us to the idea. And the reason that seven case studies is because I wanted to go really in depth. So it's not it's a few amount of stories, but very detailed with all the context. So I even include things like intake forms, so people can see, you know, there's a story which is somebody had an injury in this life, and then in a past life they got wounded, and so that sort of makes sense. And that's kind of a short abbreviated story that we've seen traditionally, and that's really helped us understand how a lot of things work. But this time I really wanted to show the process of what it's like to be in the therapy room and who the people are when they start and the journey that they go on. And so I illustrate, this is the hypnosis and hypnotherapy that we did preceding it. And so you know about this life. And then once you understand this life, you can find out what's really relevant in a past life and see how those patterns relate. And how you resolve that, often you go into between lives or you get some transcendental wisdom. And so that's where the spiritual laws came in, of recognizing everyone's got root causes for some specific issues, but overall you notice the general patterns and they conform to these laws that I've put down in the book.
So if we go over the laws quickly, I've got a note of them here.
Yeah.
Are they, like, they're listed as different laws, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but is it like the number one's the most important or are they all equal?
Well, it's all just sort of part of a continuum. So it's like a map or a model. So the first law is sort of one part of the map. And so one isn't necessarily more important than the other, but they do sort of build on each other. So the first law is karma. And that, for me, that starts off with karmic connections. Like, why are we here? What draws us to anything? And karma is really just means action. And it's the law of cause and effect. So you take an action that has an effect. Here you are. So, you know, there are things that happen to us in our childhood that affect us. There are things in past lives that affect us. And so we have connections. Maybe we're interested in healing and we've got a connection to it. But we have to then take a karmic action to make it happen. And we probably have to deal with karmic residues. We're attracted to it, but maybe we're a bit averse to it at the same time. And so that's sort of just how things get started. But then the thing is, you'll notice in karma, what I didn't mention is good karma or bad karma. Because to me, that's not really what karma is about. It's pretty neutral. It's a cause and effect. It doesn't judge if it's good or bad. But that's why law two is there. because we have this tendency to categorize things as good and bad, which is karma at a simplistic point, but it is simplistic. So we have to understand the simplicity inherent in it and our dualistic thinking. And that comes naturally because we're in a finite subjective experience. We have a dualistic mind. That's not bad. That's reality. That's how we are. So that's why it's a law, which is we got incarnated into this dualistic reality to experience duality. But eventually we can, and so that's the first set of three laws, which is sort of diagnosing the condition we're in. Karma got us here. We're in a dualistic world. We're in a finite being, but we're in an infinite universe. And if we're going to heal, law five, we can transcend. We can transcend self and other. So law seven is actually action again, but it's grounded action. So once we've had a healed view on things, the actions that we take can resolve karma. Instead of if we're acting without really knowing what we're doing, we're probably creating karma. So it all sort of loops around and connects together.
So we talk about, no self, grounded action. No self, yeah. No other. It's like you have to get out of your own way is something.
Yeah, it's, this is something that the people come to me with their intake form saying, I've got these problems. And I'm, this is bad. It hurts. It's wrong that they did this. And so I'm not saying to them the law is non-duality. Everything is one. You have no self. Therefore, you have no problems. And I think that's what some people try and skip to the solution before they've diagnosed or understood the problem. So when people say someone did something bad to me, it hurts. This feels wrong. I say, you're right. The law too is duality. It's not non-duality. And if you try and jump in and solve someone's problem by saying there's a non-dual reality, then they're not going to respond to it and they're going to get stuck in it. And so people tell me, and I agree with them, that there is self and other. The other has hurt me. I'm in pain and I'm not happy about it. So I don't tell them that there is no self and other. And I agree with them when they say the world's dualistic and that non-duality as a philosophy isn't, it can be an answer, but if you've healed. So we've got to heal that first. And then what I find is when people, and that's because people in their conscious mind have these issues. We then go into past lives and they see a karmic perspective where, yes, they were bad to me in this life. And that is a duality and that's right. But over a series of lifetimes, good and bad happen and it kind of evens out. But then you get into the transcendence, which is at an ultimate level, at one level, there is time and linear time and things happen. But at an ultimate level, eventually, you can go beyond space and time. You can go beyond self and other. And there may just be a unified dimension of infinite unity, bliss, equanimity, and a peace that passes understanding. So if you just tell somebody, be at peace because the world's infinite and don't worry about your problems, it's not going to help. But if you can guide somebody through a whole journey of understanding their this life, their past lives, going to a between lives, accessing their inner wisdom, then they will start telling me that there is no self and other. So I'm not telling them that. I'm getting them to their inner wisdom. And that's why, and I'm writing down as a reporter what they tell me. So they'll have things like, I was killed and my friends were killed in that life, but I meditated for years on it and I realized impermanence and the finite nature. And that I was able to then forgive them and then even transcend the idea of forgiveness, which is we were all souls just trying to learn spiritual lessons. And I can see that now. And that we're unified in our soul's mission to evolve and grow. And if we did that in a kind of hard way in this dualistic world, but by doing it, by rising to that challenge, we were able to grow spiritually quite quickly in this world. And it was all for an ultimate good. So, and that's a good that transcends light and dark. So in our dualistic world, it's, night and day. And that's, we can't argue that there's no night. But if you have the bigger perspective, there's no such thing as night on the sun. So the ultimate reality is infinite light. And that's what people tell me at the end of a third session. I don't tell them that at the beginning.
And in the book, you say your journey to become a spiritual regression therapist affects the type of people drawn to you as clients. I was talking to a medium once and they said something I think is similar, but you can tell me if I get this completely wrong. they were saying that in their life, they lost a family member to suicide. And they started getting all these clients coming to them who had also lost a member like that. And it was like they were getting spiritual guidance. The right people were going to the right medium. So is that what you're kind of saying?
100%. That's exactly what happened. So I'm really interested in the healer's journey and the spiritual journey. And 60% of my clients or more are healers, you know, and I almost never see people. I can think of a few cases, but, you know, out of, you know, 5,000 plus, I can think of about three people that were, it wasn't even suicide. It was grief. They're dealing with the grief of a loved one that had passed and they can't get over it. And so very rare that I'd see a case like that. But absolutely, there's a karmic connection. But there's also, I think, that there is a guiding, spiritual, wise energy that sends the right people to the right healers. I think that's why it's important to recognize how subjective we are. So, for example, a hypnotherapist might think, you know, I've done 5,000 sessions of hypnotherapy, no one's gone to a past life, therefore my experience is it's probably not true. And likewise, a past life therapist, I'm going to talk later about earthbound spirits and dark entities, and they'll go, I've done 10,000 past life sessions. I've never seen any of that. That can't be true. But it's exactly that rule, which is if that's not your karma to work with that kind of case and you're not the best person for it, you will never see them because the laws of karma and the wise transcendent beings in the universe will send the right client to the right therapist and will just completely, and then you will not even know that that exists. That's our subjective blinkers, and it's just for us to understand that just because we don't experience it doesn't mean other people aren't experiencing it in big amounts.
You do between lives regression and you do past life regression. Is there a thing where a client will come to you, get the intake form, and you can almost spot, yeah, this person needs between lives, not past life regression?
Yeah, I don't even see too much of a distinction between them because the past life regression, as I do it, inherently, I'll always, pretty much always take people to a past death. And as you're doing that, they'll come out of their body and have a life review. But then they may turn around and move into the light and then see their soul group. Their spirit guide may talk to them and they may be able to then understand that. And that's sort of part of in between lives. We've got three major groups. It is communicating at length with your spirit guide, meeting your soul group. But then the next layer can be going in front of your soul council and remembering the plan that you made to go into that life and considering the plan you made to go into the life, you know, that you're in. So almost everybody will be a bit between lifey, I would say. But then but sometimes if I'm reading an intake form, the reason that I'd think maybe between lives is for them is because they've already done substantial, very good past life regression. Therefore, their question is, well, I've remembered these three lives and they've positively affected my life in this way, but I have an extra question. So in which case we might say, well, we don't need to do too much past life regression. We can go into a past life, but just use that as a jumping off point and then review a number of lives they've already know about from that between lives perspective. So that's a kind of criteria I'd have if they're only going to do between lives. So yeah, there's a big overlap, but sometimes people specifically just want to do between lives, but they've normally done some pretty substantial past life stuff already.
And if somebody came to you and said, right, I want between lives,
yeah,
and they haven't done the stuff before, will you still do it? Or would you look at them and say, well, I'd recommend doing this first?
Between lives to me is really as a commentary that brings together all the things that you've learned over the course of multiple past lives. So it's a little bit like saying, you know, it's like if you wanted to watch American Idol and all you wanted to do was watch the judges commenting on the song, but you said, I don't want to watch the song, I just want to see the judges' commentary. That's kind of what you're asking. Like it sort of doesn't make sense. If you're watching the commentary on the song, the fact that you don't know what the song is means the commentary doesn't mean much, you know? It's a little bit like that. And so, but people can say, you know, I really want to focus on that. And so that's a quite a good example. but it is maybe a slight exaggeration in some cases. So there are some people who maybe they're in a particular situation, even in this life, and they've actually got quite a very focused reason. And they want to know, what is it in my current life circumstances with this strong emotion? Or perhaps maybe they've had a strong spiritual awakening experience. And then you can sort of cut to a spiritual dimension only. And it doesn't have to be quite so much a commentary on past lives. That's what it is most of the time. But there are exceptions. So if somebody could, in another context, come up with some other good reasons, I could be convinced to do between lives only.
You mentioned earlier that you go through the death of the past life.
Yeah.
I suppose occasionally that can be traumatic. So how do you deal with the trauma? Is it something where you might think, well, if they relive these emotions, that's really healing? Or do you look at it and think, well, yeah, there's no point re-traumatizing them. Let's take away this emotion content from it.
Yeah, I've taken thousands of people through multiple thousands of deaths. So not only do I, so often clients, you know, you'll take them to multiple lives. So even if you've got one client or one session, they may go through multiple deaths. And so one of the laws, the law three of the spiritual laws, is that things are finite. It's impermanent. It begins and ends. So yes, there's some sort of, I don't even necessarily think of it as a trauma. It's an experience that's got a vivid, visceral, emotional element that has a beginning and an end. And so you guide them to it. And it's also because they're in a hypnotic state that their wise inner wisdom gives them just enough emotion for them to feel that it's real and not doubt that they're making it up. But it doesn't give them so much emotion that it's traumatic. So I don't feel it as reliving a trauma. I think they're just getting information about an important root cause thing at a visceral level that really helps them. And that's just what I see time and time again. I just have the evidence of, so what I do is I just bring a really calm, peaceful, loving energy to that experience. If they start feeling uncomfortable or sad or whatever, I just have a calm, clear confidence and ease in that situation. And my energy sort of rubs off on them a little bit. But their stubborn, superconscious mind also has a calm, clarity, confidence, and peace, even as they're experiencing it. So at one level, they literally are. They might scream or cry, but at a certain level, there is a peace underneath that. So any of that sort of quote-unquote traumatic emotion is kind of at the surface, but it's not the deepest reality. And I know that, they know that. And that what that means is they can experience it vividly enough to learn from it. But in order to, you have to be able to feel it to be able to heal it and to feel into what it is and to learn really exactly what it is. So I find that that's very beneficial, that there's really, and you know, if you're afraid of it or and bring some of that energy, then you know, maybe it's not the best, but as therapists, we just learn, you know, to not do that. So that when we bring this energy and understanding these spiritual laws, so we have a transcendent view that this isn't a bad thing, as opposed, you know, it was good that they were in touch with their spirit guides, but now it's bad that they're remembering their death. Now we're getting lost in our own dualistic thoughts. If we can transcend that and feel all of this is for the highest good that transcends good and bad, then they go through that death experience in a short time. And then within 5, 10, 30 seconds, they are now very peaceful. They leave the body, they leave the emotion and fear behind, and they'll go from tears of sadness to tears of joy, you know, within like a minute. And so just don't get stuck up on, oh, this appears to be bad and they're having a trauma and is this a problem? And, you know, that's not my experience of it. And if we understand that, then it just doesn't have to be like that.
We're talking about life between lives. There's the soul group and the soul council. Yeah. So what role does the soul group have? Who are they?
Yeah, well, so they're loved ones that the person reincarnates with on a regular basis. So soul groups, they can have inner and outer soul groups. So what tends to be like a dozen, 12, 20 people that are close. And so, you know, your soul group says your mother, your father, your siblings, your best friends, all the 20 closest people to you in your life, well, let's say the 10 closest people to your life are part of your soul group, not all of them will reincarnate with you in every life. So there are members of your soul group who have been a big influence in your past, in a past life, but they actually don't show up in this life. But for the most part, anyone that's close to you, and that soul group is not just people you like, crucially. It's people that are karmically connected to you. So some of your enemies, you may be disappointed to find, are part of your soul group. But that's why we have this, that's a dualistic thought, to think that I like you, but I don't like you. So there's a good and a bad judgment. But some of the people that we don't like because they kick our ass into forcing us to awaken or to deal with residues of karmic emotion. Like I got anger from him in the past life. They were my best friend, but they betrayed me. So when you say I like somebody, I don't like, think about the enemies that we have. They were normally our friend before. Because if we don't like somebody, then who cares? But if we used to like them, now we don't like them. They're the people we really don't like. So it just shows duality. You know, you can't really dislike someone unless you probably really liked them before a lot of the times. Or if you think, well, that's not true because I just hated them the minute I saw them. Well, how do you have a strong emotional reaction to somebody that you don't know? You probably knew them in a past life. And then you're repeating that pattern and they're there to help you get over that kind of feeling and have a transcendent forgiveness and peace with them and to heal whatever karmic residue that they've brought in.
And you feel that that soul group, those members of that soul group will stay for always, or are there souls coming and going, or soul groups might be working on one particular thing and then they split up to another soul group?
Great question. An interesting one, because you know, then we have to start getting into transcendence of space and time. So like forever is a mighty long time. And I think we do have, people may be in your soul group. So maybe let's say, you know, that example of somebody you really don't like, and I'm telling you they're in your soul group and you're like, well, not enjoying that part. But the good news is maybe the lesson is that you can transcend this and forgive them and come to peace with them. And then everything's good. And then maybe you evolve together. Or maybe you learn your lesson and you overcome your bitterness. You have resilience. You are not shaken off by them. So you evolve, but they don't. They get stuck and they just stay mean-minded, rude, unlikable. And so maybe you'll then evolve. And out of your 20 people, maybe 16 of you in your soul group will sort of evolve to another level. And I love what you said, to learn other types of lessons. But the bottom four will just stick around, and then they'll have to deal with, then some people beneath them will sort of rise up and they'll have to deal with those people who are even worse. And they'll have to keep learning the lesson of how not to be naughty, and they'll get stuck in that. So you can evolve with them, and maybe you'll evolve sort of up and away from them in time. Yeah, certainly.
Is there a thing where two souls, I suppose one life, one's the victim, the other one's the perpetrator, and then the next life, it's the other way round, and it might have something to do with karma? And could it be a thing where one soul has karmic debt to another one?
Yeah, can be. We definitely see repeating patterns and balancing patterns where people need to come back. And so I even have an example in the book. There's a case study where... Yeah, well, in fact, a lot of them, they just keep coming. They do come back and repeat. And then, so there can be an element of karmic connection. And so it can be, at what point does somebody break that loop? So if I've done it to them, and so that, and it's actually nice. So if people think there's no possible reason for me to forgive this person because I did nothing to them and they did terrible things to me, there's no logical reason for it. There's no explanation. How could I possibly forgive them? It doesn't make any sense. Then they go back into a past life and see roles were reversed. So if anything, that just helps them get out of a victimhood. And it helps them to see that, and this is often cases, you know, just in families. You know, if a brother and sister be like, my sister was mean to me, I did nothing, you know, and then the sister is like, but you were mean to me. And they sort of don't, they understand, oh, actually we're both hurt. And if I just come out of being a victim, I can take some responsibility for what I did, and I didn't do it intentionally. It was an accident, but the fact is I still caused her pain, and now she's causing me pain, and now we're stuck in this loop. But the minute we realize, oh, you mean that really hurt your feelings and that's why you hurt me? And so there's that part where you get out of pain, and that taking responsibility is actually power. When I say, you know, don't be a victim, be responsible, that's something where it's choose, don't disempower yourself. You've got more power than you know. Don't be run by your pain. Pick your power. And taking responsibility is actually a powerful thing that gives you the ability to respond and to break whatever pattern it is and to find a peace. And sometimes you can understand it because you weigh up the karma of this and that. So I love that. It's a great point. Because I learned, because I'd done this, but then I learned in a past life that I'd actually done the same thing to them. So we're even. But with, and maybe you know that, well, maybe there can be a peace that passes understanding. Whether I can figure out exactly what all the karmic cords were, either way, there's a peace that passes understanding, which is, you know, I just don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be a perpetrator. I don't want to get revenge. I don't want to be angry. So I just choose to lay all that down. And then that's sort of a transcendent view. Where even if I don't understand it karmically, I can just know that's a hot coal that I'm carrying in my hand. And if I'm just using that to try and throw it at people, well, why don't I just put it down? I don't burn myself. I don't need to burn them. They don't have to throw it back at me. And then we sort of get out of that sense of, you know, it's me versus the other. But if you see, we're both the same. We're just in pain. I transcend this idea of self and other, and the grounded action is putting down my weapons as opposed to shooting back. And, you know.
So with the Soul Council, are the Soul Council like they've lived all the lives they need to live and they've gone beyond that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is funny. Like there are a lot of technical details that so I don't know everything and I'm not sure about everything, but as I understand it, the Soul Council they might have been human bodies in the past and learn everything they needed to know. I think that's probably the case a lot of the time. But it's possible that they weren't human and just from a higher spiritual dimension and never actually incarnated as a human. But certainly they have a sort of superhuman understanding or like an ultimately evolved one to the point where they can help guide us that are still incarnating to, look, this is a good lesson for you to learn. And dualistically, you could think, you know, I don't want to go back and be in a wheelchair. But they say, well, look, you've never been able to accept help in the past. You've helped other people. You've put others before yourself in the past. You've never let anybody help you. You've just rejected all the help. And that's kind of selfish because these people want to generate some positive karma and help you, and you've rejected it. So we're going to force you to accept other people's help. And so you're going to be in a wheelchair. And a human may not understand some of these subtleties, but if they can say this is going to be for your ultimate soul's benefit, then that's something that we recommend. And your past karma has led up to that. So that's an option that you have if you can accept that. So it's kind of a wisdom that is, again, it's a transcendent wisdom. Hard for a human to understand how that's a good idea, but they can see this really big perspective. And that will mean for your next, because they tend to look at things in groups. So often, you know, we may look at, you know, my past life was this, and therefore it affects this past life. You know, they did bad to me in this life. I did bad to them in a past life. And we can sort of grasp that at a level. But soul groups look at, well, you've done this. You did this in life A, 2, 3, 4. They can see 7 lifetimes and everything that happened and know what it all means and how all the karma adds up. Just very hard for a conscious mind to get our head around, or even us when we're in a sort of a super conscious mind. So they can have this huge big picture and see all the karmic threads that not many people can ever get. But they can put that together, know what it means, and recommend what we need to do going forward. So yeah, they've got a high level of, you know, high perspective.
So when you're doing a session, it seems that the past lives that come up during the session, they're not chosen by you, and also in a way they're not chosen by the client. So who or what decides which past life you're going to see?
Yeah, well, this is why. So this is that difference. You say they're not chosen by the client, but what do we mean by the client? And so I think the implication there is the finite being, the client being the person and their personality. So you're right, they don't choose it. It's like kind of like the conscious mind doesn't choose what past life to go to. They couldn't. They don't have that ability. And we're in a dualistic universe with a finite being. But so what I do is, what we do is we hypnotize people, bypass their conscious mind, get them into their sub or super conscious mind where we can access an infinite element of them. And so it's their own spirit guide and their higher self, high wisdom. And so, we're quite unspecific about what we say. We say, go back to a root cause, probably with a visceral emotion that's got everything to do with your issue. And then it's their infinite the consciousness that knows what that is and takes us there. I mean, that's just part of just the magic of it, isn't it?
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. And occasionally, people just don't go to a past life. Is that because you say, like, let's go to the root cause, but the root cause isn't in the past life, it's in this life?
Yeah, well, that's why I when I teach past life regression, I teach hypnotherapy first. Or people need to be a hypnotherapist first. Because for me, all we're doing is going to, a root cause in the past. And that might be in a past life or this life. So again, like you said, their finite mind doesn't know which past life to go to or how to get there. But their finite mind also doesn't even really know where the root cause is. So they've got a presenting issue, but then there's a real issue. And they say, I want to use this modality to solve my problem. And so that's why I have like extensive intakes to think, do you really need past lives or actually would between lives be good for you? Or they're saying they want past lives, but there's so much to do in this life that maybe they think they need past lives, they actually need hypnotherapy. And we can sort of do a bit of both, where oftentimes if they think they need past lives, they're normally right, but we may need to stop off to understand their this life a bit better. Because people think, well, I don't know what my past life is, but I do know what my this life is. And that's often not true. We don't know ourselves or the patterns that we're in as well as we think. And it's really helpful when you're doing past life regression to do at least some, I mean, I'd always do a little bit of hypnotherapy with pretty much any past life person most of the time. But for a lot of people, dropping into maybe even just for 10 minutes, but you can get a lot of information about their this life. And then that will make sense. That then the past life that they get to will make a lot of sense. Because the point of past lives isn't who was I, what happened. It's what are the themes? What are the spiritual lessons that I'm learning? And what has that got to do with the now? So it's not really about being interested in the past. It's about being interested in who exactly am I now? What has my karma from the past made me now? What does that mean? What karmic residue do I have to heal now? How's that going to help me in my future? So past life regression sounds like it's about the past, but it's really just about being really present and authentic in the moment so that you can move forward. Not about getting hung up on the past at all.
There's a sentence in the book that really stood out to me where you say, in past life regression, it's possible past life scenes are literal, and it's also possible they are only poetic teaching parables. So is it like that? Yep. You're saying that the past life they see is just kind of made up?
Not necessarily. I think both things are possible simultaneously. So, but that's a great point, because what the thought pattern there is a kind of dualistic apparent opposite. And so when we read a sentence like that, we think it's one versus the other. And so that's, again, just illustrating law two duality. And so that's why, for me, a lot of the book is about transcending dualistic opposites. So it's either a metaphor or it's literal. And for me, it can be both. And I can be working with a person and I'll think, and they'll say, I'm in the jungle, I'm in South America, I've got, oh no, it's gone wrong. They look kind of like South India, Asia, but I know that it's in the Amazon, so I've got it wrong. So I've messed that up. I'm making it up. But anyway, there's this thing where I'm doing a ceremony and it's healing. And now I'm in Lemuria and there's a flood and now I'm getting healed from that. And they think, the first one was mythical and a metaphor because it was factually incorrect. But then this has literally happened. They go and Google it and say, I thought I was making it up, but I actually did some research and it was exactly that tribe in the Amazon does exactly have that. And I never knew that, but it turns out I wasn't making it up after all. And so that was literal. But then maybe that thing about Lemuria, maybe that was metaphoric. That was just a healing metaphor that my mind used to sort of wrap things up. And so I think both can exist simultaneously without necessarily being a contradiction. But it's also a way of just, I sort of say that as well. That if somebody, like I've worked with Muslims, for example, in India, a big Muslim population in India, and they'll come to me and say, look, I want to do past life regression, but I'm a Muslim, so I don't care. You know, if these Hindus say reincarnation, whatever, I don't care, but I do want healing. And then they'll go into past lives. And then it's just really how you analytically understand it afterwards. So they'll say, well, obviously I'm not a Hindu and that wasn't a past life, but when I did go into that past life, it was really healing. So I'm going to treat it as a metaphor. So it's a little bit like, you know, however you want to think of it, I don't really care. I'm not dogmatically saying this is not a metaphor. Other scientists say that. But they're atheists, they're non-believers. I'm a believer. I believe past lives are right. They're literal. I mean, I personally think most of the time they are literal. Occasionally, there are metaphoric aspects that come up and that's fine. But for the most part, I think they are literal. But if somebody else doesn't believe that, I'm not going to get into a fight with them about it. If they believe it's not, I'll be like, okay, that's fine with me. So that's a little bit of a part of that, which is, you know, I don't know everything. If other people believe differently, that's cool. So there's a little bit of that in that statement.
And so when you're doing a pre-talk with a client who hasn't done this before, would that be something you'd say as part of the pre-talk? I mean, what else do you say to them?
No, I wouldn't undermine myself necessarily. If they're a Muslim and say, you know, are you telling me this is literal? Or I'm a scientist, so I appreciate the help. I feel drawn to it, but I'm really having an analytical conflict. I'll say, well, let's just put your analytical mind aside. The fact that you're here, so as you're ready to experience it, so just bring a beginner's mind. Be open, just be ready to experience whatever you experience. It's okay to have some analysis as you go along, but just follow the instructions is the main thing. Don't let yourself be instructed by, you know, your previous opinions or what somebody else said on, you know, Wikipedia says it's pseudoscience. Don't let that run the show. And they wouldn't even, if they were in your office paying for the sessions, that's not really going to be an issue anyway. You know they're in it enough. So I don't give much of a pre-talk about, you know, trying to convince them that it's real or not. You know, they're normally past that point. So we can just, you know, just continue with the process as normal.
Do you mention this idea that, and I know how this feels when I've been taking through past life regression, is that you feel that you're just making it up. It's all coming up in your imagination.
Well, this is why it's so important to go to root cause emotions. And actually, that's why you have to have good rapport with your clients. So I will have, you know, in these intake forms and interviews, all I'm doing is building up rapport so that they trust me, they trust themselves, and they trust the process. So, and I, even the first session, I tend to do a 3-session program, beginning, middle, and end. So I don't, if you just sort of go in a first session and say, go to the deepest, darkest thing you've ever experienced, people will hold back. But if you warm into it, you build up resources, gather light, and then say, now that we've got all that light, now that you know everything works, now that you know you're a powerful being with great abilities and you've taken responsibility, now we can take responsibility for any shadow and you're bravely doing that regardless of whatever your conscious mind, blah, blah, beliefs are. We're going to go into that root cause and shine a light on it. And when they go in with that, and if something bad comes up, like you get into a death, I'm not going to see it as traumatic or be worried. You will have that peaceful feeling towards it. We'll shine a light on it. We'll learn from it. And then because of that, we'll know what it is and we'll be able to heal it. So if you go in with that kind of attitude, energy, and preparation, then people will be willing to go to the deepest, darkest, worst thing that ever happened. They'll go into deaths and sometimes even a fate worse than death. You know, horrific things that have happened throughout the course of history. That is the root cause. So we have to face a lot of that. but they'll do so with a transcendent kind of view that makes it palatable. And then they'll feel that it's real. They won't feel too much, but they'll feel enough to know and to heal it. And that's kind of what we want to get our clients to. If we just have them go in sort of slightly, a little bit intellectual, sort of thinking about things in their mind, and they remember I was here and I did that. So I've got a case study in the book where Meg is a healer and she goes back to being in Tibet and she's a student and has a lot of students. And she's like, I was a kid at this monastery and I felt uncomfortable and lonely from my family. But then I grew up and I became a teacher to these kids and the new kids that were coming to the monastery, I helped them and that's my thing. And so a lot of people would say, oh, I took my client back and she was in a Tibetan monk and she was sad about being a kid, but then she healed the other kids and that was an amazing past life. But there's a big part that was missed out because what I did was I said, well, this is a nice story, but I think you're holding back on something. This isn't a very visceral emotion. You're here to really heal something. So don't hold back. Don't be afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it. Whatever thing is there, let's go to it. And so then she started sort of hyperactively breathing and she screamed out, my students, they're killing my students. And she went into the scene of seeing her students being murdered. And she did that because I really encouraged her to do it. She didn't know it was coming. She subconsciously knew there was something there, but was just trying to wiggle out of it. So a big part of my message for clients is be brave and face the thing that you're really there to deal with. And for therapists, it's to create a situation where they have enough trust in you that you can take them to those emotions and they can get what they're really there to heal. Because you can easily think that, oh, my client wasn't that dramatic, or I'm not sure if we really did as much as we could have. But it's because you really want to focus on that emotion and building up their ability to face it. And when you do, that's when you can go to another level. And so that's actually a big part of why the book's only got 7 case studies, because people could look at it and go, oh, Mark did hypnotherapy on this client, and I understand that. And I know that client, I've seen an intake form like that, I've seen a hypnotherapy session like that. But then he took it to another level and did a past life. Oh, maybe I could do that with a client. And then all past life people can read it. And so I have clients exactly like that. He did their past life regressions. That's exactly what I would have done. Or I can see how he did that. That's really cool. But then there was that one little thing there about a little darkness or a shadow, a little hint. And Mark picked up on that. And then he ended up doing 2 sessions of spirit release because of that. Now, I've actually got clients who had that same kind of thing and I didn't know what to do with it. So I just thought the healing was done. But I could have actually done a few more sessions and taken it to another level. So that's kind of a big part of why the book, it's only 7 case studies, but it's like 4 or 5 sessions covering like 4 modalities. So they're such dense and informative cases, so few, but like so deep. It's like you take one little grain of sand, but you examine it properly, like to the full extent, and you can see the whole beach.
So how do you deal with clients who may go into just getting glimpses and you try and find out what's going on and then they just say, oh, it's gone. I'm just in a black space now. And then they get a glimpse of something else, might be another life, but you can't really seem to get into it.
Yeah, but I do so much preparation and stuff beforehand. And maybe it can be in the preparation, like I might say, realize that there's some other modality that suits or the main thing is once you really get into those key emotions, I think it tends to flow from there. Because it's also, if you're saying like, oh, they don't really see something. Well, that's actually, it's a good, I'm glad you said that actually, because people really overvalue what they see and they undervalue what they feel or know. And so they may then just be getting tripped up on the visual aspect. So if they say, I can't see very much, I'll say, what do you hear? What do you feel? What can you know? And getting in touch with that can help. And so, that's a small thing and that may just be a small part of it, but that's certainly something that comes in. People can sort of sabotage themselves by analytically thinking past life regression should look like a movie. But for most people, the images may be kind of fuzzy, like a postcard or just a little scene. But what's more important is the emotion. And so, you know, I don't see much isn't something where I would sort of stop and feel blocked. You just sort of continue on and go. And so, but with what you do see, what can you know from that and how can you play that forward, et cetera. So that can be another part of it, perhaps.
That sounds like you're talking a lot about emotional healing and that side of things. But what about physical healing? Do you ever have people coming to you that might just have some eczema or an unexplained pain somewhere?
Yeah, if they just have eczema, then it's just eczema. But people don't really just have it. But people, well, that's another thing. People lead this visual, auditory, kinesthetic knowing. And that they want to start, they get it the wrong way around. You have to switch it. It's actually kinesthetic, feeling, hearing, then seeing. And so people come at it that way. And it's the same thing, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. People come in and saying, oh, I've just got this physical thing. Well, if it's just physical, go to a just physical healer. But it's not normally. So, you know, eczema or I've got sore knees. So the example I gave about the lady who was, her students were being killed. She had said, I've got this aversion. I've got attraction to Buddhist teaching and past life regression, but I've also got an aversion. I'm kind of afraid of it. I've also got sore knees. I've also got lack of confidence. I've also got, you know, fear in the face of authority. So people don't come with just one thing. And so they start off saying that because they don't know what to say or like how to fully communicate. So he's telling me about this physical thing, but what is the emotional component of it? What limiting belief or past experience might relate to it? What spiritual lesson might this be telling you? And so I dig all of that out of them. And so then I'd reorientate it. We're not going to do a session for a physical thing. We're going to look at what's a spiritual, mental, and emotional thing that's happening. And then how's that then showing up physically? So in the case of this lady, you know, it was really gathering the confidence to become a spiritual healer. But she'd also said, you know, I've had a lot of knee pain my whole life. And I'm also, you know, I'll just put that on the list as one more thing that we can hopefully do in the session. And what turned out was, you know, you might even think, oh, she got killed and she got her knees hurt. But it was actually afterwards, she wasn't killed and she died peacefully as an old person. But the way that she recovered from that, the experience of seeing her friends being killed was she sat in meditation for so long that she transcended her body. But when she came back to her body, she realized she'd messed up her knees. And so the side effect of the spiritual healing of resolving that was that, oh, by the way, your physical issue of your knees, improved to a great degree. In fact, she said it went away completely, which is, you know, amazing. So when people come and say, I've got a physical issue but nothing else, I'm like, well, don't misinterpret the meaning of that story. It was really a spiritual, mental, and emotional thing. And the physical thing is kind of a side effect. And so if it's only physical, then it's kind of not really, you know, our job is the subconscious. And if it's not a subconscious issue, it's a physical issue, then it's kind of, you know, not my business how I see it. But if you can dig in and find out, well, how could the subconscious be involved And this physical manifestation, because, you know, mind and soul are one mechanism, like one can certainly affect the other. And I'll particularly look at things like syndromes, where there's a physical impact, but the physical medicine can't figure out where it is. So something like IBS, it's irritable bowel syndrome. And syndrome means they don't really know how it works physically. They can't take a snapshot of it or measure that's the kind of thing where it's really a sort of a psychosomatic issue, not a physical issue, but they'll present it as being a physical issue.
With the healing, something's happening to heal them. Would you say it's a release of negative energy or it's breaking a bond with the past life? Have you ever thought of what mechanism is happening there?
Yeah. I mean, I would consider it like releasing a karmic residue, but I'd watch my language, so I wouldn't call it. I mean, my client would call it a negative energy, but that's law too. That's duality, and certainly, if someone says I've got IBS, that's negative. I wouldn't say, oh, you must understand. There's no such thing as negative or positive. I'll say that's right. It's negative. We're going to heal that. But the way that I'd think about it is that it's a karmic residue. It's not necessarily negative or positive. If anything, it's something that helps us understand reality. It's an opportunity for us to heal. And then it's not just curing the IBS, because the IBS is just the end of the road. You may find that what you've actually done is that what's actually happening is you've got a lot of anxiety. And that anxiety is due to a certain reason. And you're kind of pooping yourself metaphorically. So that's where it becomes a poetic metaphor. And so what you end up healing is not your bowels, but you heal the anxiety. And that's affecting your bowels, but it's affecting your relationships. It's affecting your job. It's affecting your spiritual path. So they come in wanting their bowels to be healed, but they heal themselves at an emotional, spiritual level. And it does heal their bowels, but it heals so many other things in life as well. So that's a transcendent, bigger picture view of what's happening. And so therefore, was IBS negative? It was in the moment, but it has a transcendent positive, because that is what it took for you to go to a healer. You would have never gone to a healer for anxiety, but you did go for IBS, and that enabled you to heal yourself at a much deeper level than you'd even consciously thought was possible. That sub-superconscious mind in your guides would have even manifested and made the IBS a bit worse just to kick you in the butt and say, go and get some healing, even if it's something ridiculous like past lives. And then they show up. So it's actually, sometimes it needs to get worse in order to get better. So, you know, you really start transcending these dualities in so many ways.
So is it possible that people might come to you for healing, but it's healing something they're supposed to be working on in this life? And if you help them with it, that's, in the long run, that's bad. Like, you're interfering with whatever karmic debt there is. Or is it a thing that they'd never come to you in the first place because they wouldn't be guided to you?
Yeah, the second part. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because, yeah, if they're there asking for healing, that is what they need to heal, and you're not interfering. But that's a good point, because you're not soliciting them. They have to come to you, request it, set an intention for me, fill out an intake form, and really ask for it to be there. So I'm not telling them. You know, I don't meet somebody on the bus and say, oh, you know, you've got IBS, you better come down for some past life regression. You know, I'm not selling it. I'm not a evangelical. They've got to come to me. So it's all their intention, all their guidance. I'm not really a salesperson, and I'm just offering it. And I will also, you know, if they say, oh, you know, are you interfering? I need to have this physical, like, I'm in a wheelchair, or I've got this, you know, physical problem, and I need to burn off a karmic debt. And so that's actually something I do see. But what I tend to find is by the time they come to me, they feel I've got this karmic burden. And then they realize when I was dying, I said, oh, I'm so sorry that I hurt you. I wish that I can come back and be hurt, and I can suffer with this affliction. I created so much pain and suffering for you. I want to feel that suffering so I even out. And that is, to me, a misunderstanding of what karma is. You're taking karma as being good versus bad and debt, but the fact is that that is karma in itself. Karma is the thought that you have. So if people misunderstand karma as a dualistic thing, they bring these negatives on themselves. In that case, negative karma becomes a very real thing because they believe it is. And I've seen this, and I've had spirit guides say they misunderstood it. They have brought more suffering on themselves than they ever needed. And the karmic break isn't them living in pain for another 30 years. The karmic breakthrough is that they realize you've suffered enough and you can let this burden down. And so you're not interrupting the karma they should have had. You're updating it to a better understanding of reality and freeing them from it. So it is healing, and it's not, certainly not, you know, breaking something that shouldn't have been broken at all.
Well, we've been talking about the book is Past Life Awakening, 7 Regression Case Studies Illustrate 7 Spiritual Laws. And people can get that on Amazon worldwide, can they?
That's right, yeah. Amazon, the ebook is now out. There's hard copy around. If they go to my website, Past Life Awakening Institute, I've got a book page, and it's available from hard copy retailers in the US, the UK, Europe, Australia. So if they go there, they want their hard copy, they can get it from there. And yeah, and so my website's Past Life Awakening. I've got a podcast, Past Life Awakening, and YouTube. So yeah, they're my main where they can find out about it, and Instagram, Past Life Awakening. So they're my big ones.
And people can find out about your courses on your website.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, thanks. I've got, I offer sessions. So I give personal one-to-one sessions, 3 to 5 sessions as a program. I also have training courses where people can find out about this. So the book is kind of case studies and philosophy or these laws in a way that I've never really explained before in any of my trainings. And it's, but then I have inexpensive courses where you can find out, you know, in great detail, and you get scripts. If you're a healer, you're thinking you're wanting to know more about it and to maybe do some initial practice with people, then you can get those courses and you can start doing some initial work with your clients. And if you decide you want to be a full-time professional and get really, really good and do it sort of as one of your main modalities, then I offer mentored one-to-one training. And so that's kind of an extensive program for people that really want to get serious about it, but I mentor people. And yeah, so that's sort of the main offerings that I have. And for people that are just curious, like my YouTube channel has got online audio meditations, and some of my courses have got sort of in-depth processes that can replicate. So the effect of having individual sessions, they're not interactive, but it does take you through like a 6-hour program with filling out intake forms and really thinking and reflecting and all of that. So I've got a bunch of resources there that people can explore.
Fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thanks again. My pleasure. Always good to see you, Simon.
This week, I was talking to Mark Beale about his book, Past Life Awakening, 7 Regression Case Studies Illustrate 7 Spiritual Laws. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you can get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. So you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book on verified near-death experiences is now published, and you can get it on Amazon and in other great bookshops. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.